Hello, you're listening to Karina and you are on the Picture House podcast. I am here with the lovely Lorna Tucker, who is here to introduce her new fabulous documentary, which we cannot wait to screen in Picture House cinemas very soon. Lorna, tell us your film. What's the title? What's it about? What's your pitch?
The pitch. The film is called Westwood, Punk Icon Activist, and it's a portrait of a female artist, is how I see it. It's obviously about the formidable Vivienne Westwood, and it's a tale that's weaving together a story of a today of a woman who's in the later stages of life, who's still just as witty and as strong and as unforgiving as she was 40 years ago. But also for me, at an age where most women are supposed to disappear, you know, we're not supposed to wear incredible clothes and go out there and cause mischief, you know, over certain ages. She's nearly 77. And also her work ethic was inspiring. But what really inspired me when I worked with her a few years back is actually the bits that she would talk to me about when the cameras were off that really inspired me. So she's not nostalgic, and she will sit there and she's like, how can I change the world? How can I make the world a better place? And when she does interviews, it's very geared towards that. And I felt for a new generation and people that aren't very aware of her past, actually what will make people listen and understand her so much more is those more intimate stories that we can all relate to. So for me, I set out to make a film that was a film that goes back into the past and explains who she is and how difficult it was for her, and how long it took her to become established in her industry, and all the things she had to overcome being a woman in an industry run by men designing for women, you know, a woman at the later stages of life, a woman carving out a business career and remaining independent. And as I never went to film school, didn't really go to school that much, as a very young single mum, really having to fight a lot to try and find my place in the film industry. And it's taken quite a long time to get here.
It's interesting what you're saying about how you're relating to her character and the obvious ways she's inspired you. And neither of us are Vivienne Westwood, but there was so much of her character that I relate to and anybody can relate to, because of, especially as a Londoner, working class, finding your career a bit later in life.
Yes.
And also, I loved hearing about the way that she's embracing fashion even in her older age. And this is something that we're not supposed to do so much as women. And I loved how every other scene she was in another fabulous outfit. I mean, of course, it's Vivienne Westwood. She would be.
I know.
Very good.
And it was fun. But what I wanted to do was show her in a way that the whole world could relate to her. Okay, it'd be very easy to make a film that just was very glossy and it was showing how the brand's inspiring, or a biopic about her life, or, you know, there was many ways that we could approach it, but I wanted it to be fun. I wanted it to be silly. I wanted it to appeal to all ages, but I also wanted to show her in that private way that I got to see her. I wanted to show her vulnerable, you know, and frustrated and doubting herself, because although they're the things most artists don't want you to see, me as a woman, I wake up every day and I want to give up, right? Because it's hard. And it's hard if you don't have money and you're trying to make decisions that can, you know, we have to make those decisions. And most people I know have told me to give up at some point in my career. It shouldn't be this hard. You need to start earning money. Like, what are you doing? And so the story she doesn't publicly normally tell you, or the ones you don't normally see, is the one that inspired me to carry on going. And I wanted the world to see that. So for example, obviously the berating me, I wanted in there just because it's fun. But one of the first parts of the film is showing her having that crisis of confidence with her designs, with the shop, considering closing shop and giving up. And I had a lot of people say to me, why are you opening the film like this? You should be holding her up as this demigod. And I'm like, no, because I feel like that every day. And if I feel like that, I know so many people out there feel like that. Mm-hmm. And I want them to know, if she still does that at the top of her game, it's all right. I can do that.
I thought that opening was really interesting, because you're right. I can imagine a lot of critics looking at that and thinking you're painting a portrait of a woman that is very craggy and difficult. But actually, you're right. I saw her first, even before the bit that you just mentioned, she's denouncing how interesting she is. She's bewildered why you're even bothering to tell her story. And that taps into so much familiarity that us women have on things like imposter syndrome.
Every day.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, right, I've just finished that film. I finished another film. I'm in edit with a new film. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Crap. I want to run away. Yeah. Like, I've conned the whole world to believe them that I can make these silly films, right? And now people are paying me to make these silly films. it was a chance. Mm. Like, I can't do that again. But then, you know, 2 weeks into it, you're like, oh, I've got this idea. And then there's another idea. And then you get to the end of the film. And I know by this summer when I have to hand the film over, I'm not going to want anyone to see it because I'll think it's crap. And that's what we all, it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though at the moment I'm like, I can't do it. I want to run away.
So tell me, where did your first fascination with Vivienne Westwood come from?
Yeah, I didn't really know much about her. I'm going to tell you a little story that I've never told anyone, actually.
Excellent.
Because it could be sued. Yeah, I know, the exclusive, and it's only because we've got a bit of history. Most people know, I'll tell you the story that everyone else knows after this, but the real story is, I think I was 19. I was a single mom. I was homeless, living in hostels, and I had no money. And I got scouted in London, actually, to model. And I was like, they said the word money. I was like, I can do that. Like, what do I have to do? Just look stupid? I can do that easily. And not downplaying what models do. Obviously, I think it's a very hard job. So I did it, and I did it for a year, and I ended up giving up because I don't agree with the weight thing. And I, you know, I didn't want to be in an industry that made me happy, but I did have fun when I was doing it. And one of the jobs that I was booked to do was a charity show. And one of the designers whose clothes were being showed was Vivienne Westwood clothes. I really want to find out what show it was. If there's anyone out there listening to this and they know, I want to know. But all the models were given a bottle of Vivienne Westwood perfume to spray. Mm. And I remember backstage, and they dressed us all up. And then Vivienne had come in, and she had checked all the outfits. And she, I think she even said something about my eyes, like, oh, you've got really pretty eyes. And I was just like, oh, didn't know anything about her. All I knew is the perfume was nice, and me and all the models stole the perfume, and I could just remember running out that door hearing, can everyone hand the perfume back now, please? So I think it was around the launch of Boudoir. So after then, I kind of didn't ever see her again, but I've been a fan of the perfume ever since. So I stole from her. That was the first time I met her.
Right.
But the reason we became working together was because I was working with a couple of bands, and Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age had been asked by Vivienne, cornered by Vivienne, I think, at a party. She'd written a rap song. And it was for Liberty.
Wow. Okay.
And she wanted to record it. And she was like, you're a musician. Do you want to record it? And he was like, yeah, this is great. So he rang a band, another band that I worked with, Uncle, and was like, well, you're in London. Can you record it? And we'll work on it together. So the guys from Uncle were like, Lorna, you should come and film this. This is actually really funny.
Yeah.
It will, not in a bad way, but it could be fun.
Because you were working in music promos at that point.
Yeah. So I'd basically been a chancer. So I'd managed to get on tour with a couple of bands, taking their pictures that I'd met in bars. And then I kind of worked my way up that way, just because it was like, I was good at keeping secrets. I grew up around boys. I could go on the tour bus, leave the tour bus, and personally edit the pictures. Yeah. One day I should write a book. No, I won't. Don't get scared if any of you guys are listening to this. So I cycled down on my bike with my camera on my back, and I filmed for the day, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I didn't know anything about her past, but what I was confronted with was this incredible woman with this long red hair, dressed up with this like army hat on, bringing her grandchildren in with their like mini Vivienne Westwood dresses. And she spat out a rap, and it was mind blowing. And I just sat there filming it going, I don't know anything about this woman, but she is insane, right? She is amazing. Like, I want to be like her when I'm older. And we started talking, and we kind of got on, and we just kept in touch very loosely for a couple of years. And then I started doing a documentary that actually was my first, but it's coming out as my second later on this year. And it was working in Indigenous communities throughout America. And she was promoting a lot of Indigenous charities and working with a political case in Native communities. So every time I came back, I'd give her the gossip, and we would kind of chat and have tea. And then Dazed Confused asked if I wanted to do a takeover. And I was like, well, yeah, but I want to do it with this woman. She's amazing.
Very cool.
Yeah. So we did that, and the rest, they say, is history.
Yeah. Oh, fabulous. So it's clear to see that from the opening and the other media that's been around the press of this film, that it's clearly a story that you wanted to tell, but not necessarily the one that she wanted to tell. There's so many questions around this. I mean, what's your relationship with her now on it? Because I can imagine that being quite a difficult thing, because you've got two artists here who want to create and tell a story.
Yeah.
And when you watch the film, you can see how meticulous she is about everything. So I can understand. But I also think that no matter what film was created, nothing would have been perfected unless she directed it herself.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's really key to remember. So every filmmaker I've met that's made a biopic or a documentary on an artist has gone through a very similar thing. And that was really reassuring in Sundance, how many people came up to me and they were like, I'm going to tell you a horror story now. And I was like, oh my God, it's not just me. I'd like, you know, when I started filming with Vivian, I was filming a lot of her activism. I was inspired by her activism. But as I said, it was the stories before her talking about the activism. She's got a very strong public persona and a very strong message she's trying to get across and doesn't care about anything else other than that. And for me, being in touch with different cultures, different age groups, you know, I knew if you want to inspire people, you have to go about it in a more subtle way. And realizing that she'd always been an activist and it had been something that had been in her bones since birth, I knew that I had to really dig deep. And we discussed this with the team, and she allowed me to film the fashion and the activism and the interviews and the family. And we really took a lot of time. I was warned by quite a lot of people, whatever film I made, she wouldn't like it. And I knew it would be difficult because I knew she had one particular message she was trying to get to. But that's why I took my time in filming, because you have to film so much that people take their guard down and they act natural. And I didn't want to make a promotional piece or propaganda. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to make a talking. I wanted to weave together a story that would entertain but inspire. My way of going to entertain and inspire would be a lot more of a subtle way as a storyteller. Hers is an incredible way, but it's very in your face. You know, it's very protest. She makes films that she puts on Instagram, and she's got a very particular taste in the way she approaches things. So of course, when you've got two artists making a project, there's always going to be that moment. And as a filmmaker, I had to say no to creative feedback. Obviously, there was things she wasn't happy with that were very personal, and I course change that and work with that. But then I had to have the self-belief that the story I was telling was an authentic one. Mm-hmm. It wasn't propaganda. There was absolutely, I couldn't make a fluff piece for the brand. I couldn't deny the world that inspiration to have someone to look up to and someone to be inspired by. Thankfully, what the audience has taken away from the film is she's always been an activist, and actually everyone has got the subtlety and they've sat through a whole film to watch that and understand the subtlety, whereas they might not have done that if it was an hour and a half film.
Yeah,
that was just a protest piece.
I absolutely agree. And I was quite surprised to hear that she didn't think that there was enough activism in it, because I thought there was a lot of activism in
every
it.
Every scene, yeah. The fashion shows that she's being an activist within fashion.
Everything she is doing. Her just being there, her continuing to work, even though like the press was, I found the press fascinating, the way that they treated her on television. They just laughed her out of the studio, literally. And even that is an activist piece in herself, because she was just like, okay, two fingers up,
fine.
Sod it.
You can laugh, but just look first, you know.
And of course, there's the humanizing of such an incredible icon also adds that texture to help understand why somebody does what they do. And I thought that was really interesting to hear the backstory. Like, I was fascinated to see how she, like any of us young women, are drawn into this ideal of the American dream. And, you know, you're not just born a rebel. You experience things and then you're like, why am I being taught this thing? This is bollocks.
It feels rubbish. I know. Yeah. I was the same. I was pregnant when I was younger, and when I was growing up, I grew up in an estate, and it was like lots of teenage pregnancies, council houses, all this stuff. And when I found out I was pregnant, I was like, I don't want to be like that.
Mm. Where were
and
you born?
Watford, actually. Oh, okay. And then grew up in sort of more East London. But I just remember being kind of like, you know, actually, it's a baby. I can deal with a baby. It's fine. And no one tells you, like, no, that baby's going to be a teenager and they're going to hate your guts, right? That baby's nothing. Yeah. No, I was joking. But, you know, and I've got wonderful kids and I'm really amazed by my family, but it is difficult. Life's really hard, and I want to show how hard it is and how you can overcome it, though, by just becoming stronger as a person. And I think that's a bit of my take on what's going on in the industry right now. We need to raise our sons and daughters to not accept that treatment, because there's always going to be bullies out there, right? There's always going to be people taking advantage of people. So it's down to us women not to take that anymore. And she was like the forerunner in that. You know, people wouldn't fund her. People were laughing at her. People were telling her she's stupid and her designs are crap. And she's just like, no, I believe what I'm doing is good. Obviously, she faltered and it's hard. But she was just like, no, I'm not going to take it. No, I'm just going to do this. And she did it.
Yeah, it really is an inspiring story to see. And I learned so much more about this icon who, again, in the fashion world, is just absolutely gunning it and doing incredible, inspiring things and blazing a trail. But I feel like I got to know Vivian Westwood a lot more on her human side, not just the artist side, but also to see an artist at work was fabulous. So I've seen it twice now, and the second time I saw it up on the big screen, and I really appreciated its big screen value, because you have the catwalks and they're so gorgeous, and you see again an artist at work and the complexities of her messy chaos, but it's all in order, her workshop and how she works with her husband. And it was very, very fascinating to see somebody's artistic process.
Yeah, and to see also even relationships, that it doesn't have to be like, we don't have to have what is seen as like, you know, everything has to be ticking a box. It's like her relationship with her partner and their working relationship and their life relationship. It's really interesting, and it's really nice to see, you know, so many people who have watched it said to me, oh, I thought it was just a young guy that she'd been seeing for a few years. And I'm like, no, they've been together for a very long time. And whatever your perceptions are of that, there's a true partnership there.
Yeah, that working relationship to see was beautiful. Yeah. And again, you don't always see these older women who are working so hard and are seen as such battle axes actually making time for love and romance, but actually she's a real sweetheart at
totally
heart.
I know, there's so many moments of the stuff that obviously couldn't make it in the film because of time and length. But you know, we went to Glastonbury and to some festivals with them both when she was doing talks, and it was just so lovely watching just the way that he would touch her and the way that he would like protect her and look after her, and you find yourself going, oh.
Yeah, I did a few weepy moments, like, oh, that's so cute. So you've been on an incredible journey with this film, and you premiered at Sundance. Yeah. Tell me about your Sundance experience. Was that fun, exhausting?
Amazing. Obviously exhausting and amazing. For 10 years, I've been trying to convince people to pay me to make films and nobody would, and I get it. And it's been quite a long journey of going out and either filming people and disappearing. So you're just a mute filming for days and weeks and weeks and months and years and end, or you're begging people to give you money or to allow you to make films, or you're sitting in a room with a grumpy editor not talking very much. And it's a very strange existence, and I've been doing that for 10 years. I've never finished anything and released anything. So to finish Westward and then to be accepted into Sundance was, I literally had a break, almost breakdown, because I was like, because you dream about, I don't dream about wealth or anything like that, but it's like to be able to go meet other filmmakers, to go to someone like Sundance that really look after filmmakers, and to be able to finish a film and it to come out and to sit there and watch it. And obviously the first screening I had to sit in, so I just watched everyone's reactions. I was like, are they laughing? They're laughing. Okay. Oh, no. Oh, they got it. They got it. Oh. Why are they laughing at that? That's not even funny. You know? And it was, but it was amazing to go out there and also baptism by fire, doing press and saying all the wrong things and, you know, causing a lot of mischief and then going, okay, I mustn't ever say that again because I didn't mean it like that, you know. Yeah. But the whole process was amazing and I was looked after, and it was great just people coming up to you in the street going, your film was amazing and thank you for being so honest about it. It made me feel really normal. And students sending me letters saying they were inspired. I was like, oh my God, now I'm not just this crazy person stalking people and trying to make films. Like, I can actually use my film to inspire people or entertain people. And it was just, it was so amazing. It went so quickly. And then before I know it, I was back at home with three kids puking and ill and like getting covered in bogeys going, was that real? Did that glamorous thing just happen? But yeah, no, it was amazing. And I really hope I get to go back there with other films. That was amazing.
Excellent. And your festival circuit hasn't finished?
No.
Where are you on to next?
So we just did True False, which was wonderful. See, we've got quite a short festival run because we were pre-sold for theatrical release around the world. So it's been short, but very, very sweet. So next week I'm going to Copenhagen for CPH, and they're amazing. They're putting on a big gala to collaborate with Copenhagen Fashion Week and Westward, and they're going to do an amazing screening there. And it's nice because when I was starting out Westward, I went to CPH and pitched it and it got picked up, and it was just amazing. So it's going to be nice to go back there. Then we go on to Barcelona to Feed Dog Festival, and then I fly back the next morning because on Friday the 23rd it's released in cinemas throughout the UK. And we're doing an amazing event on the 23rd on the Curzon in Mayfair, where it's going to be hosted by Women in Film, and Kodak Studios produced the new film I'm in edit with now. They're amazing. Actually, they've been supportive for me as a woman from the get-go, and they are great. But anyway, and we're going to be hosting a panel where we're all going to address our thoughts and where we are, which we are in such an amazing place, like we've come so far, but there's still things that need to change. So we're going to do the screening. Obviously, I'll do a Q&A, and then after that, we're going to do an amazing discussion on, come on, let's move this forward. So that would be really fun. I'm looking forward to that. And then the one thing I've got to say I'm really looking forward to is my hometown. I moved to Lewis a few years ago and they asked us to do a Q&A. So I've got obviously loads of Q&As to do with the film, but my favourite will be on Monday the 26th because that's my hometown. So it'll be like a little gossip. Yeah, a little gossip in a little village about what happened.
And your kids will be there?
And no, I think it's a bit too sweary for them.
Okay.
Well, one's 17 and she'll love it.
Has she seen it yet?
No, she hasn't. But remember, I'm a mum to her, so she thinks I'm uncool and anything I do is uncool. In about 3 years' time, she'll be lovely and she'll be like, Mum, you are amazing. Right now, she's just like, but the other two are way too young for that. They'd just be like, what's fuck? So yeah, that's the next week and a half. And then it comes out in the US and Australia in June. So after next weekend, I'll be locked away back in edit again until the summer.
And then in the summer,
you have a new film coming out.
Yeah. Where do you actually get to sleep or eat at any point?
I eat on the go.
Right.
I don't sleep very much.
There's a real power woman I'm talking to here.
That's what the red lipstick's about, because I think if people look at my lips, they won't see how tired and bloodshot my eyes are. It's my new trick.
Secret weapon.
We'll have to talk again when the new film's coming out, because that one is something that has held my heart for 10 years. And I have been told to stop it every year for 10 years on this film. And the women are getting older. And so the film is about the enforced sterilization on Indigenous women in America. It's called AMA, but it's also talks about that this affected African American communities, Hispanic communities, poor women, drug addicts, alcoholics, prisoners. It's a big thing, but the film focuses on the Indigenous community to open up the discussion, because whole tribes were actually destroyed by this. That's genocide, you know, because each tribe is like a whole different race of humans, and that there was one, the core tribe, that's been wiped out from it, which is horrific. But you go on the journey with these women, and you go on this journey where they're trying to find out how and why this happened to them. And they're all now in the later stages of life. And then through the process of the film, best friends found out it happened to each other. And then they found out it was happening to their sisters and their cousins. And it opened a bigger story of why didn't they know? And it's because they all felt so ashamed that they never told anyone. And that's why it ran so rampant in Indigenous communities, because in their communities, their wealth is their children. And when they couldn't have children, it was something that drove them to alcoholism and into extreme behaviors. So it went on for 40 years without anyone knowing about it. And the film for me is great because outreach will be led by Native women. I just helped tell their story and put it into a format that I felt could reach globally, but it's their story. So we'll be touring universities and we'll be touring cinemas with that later on in the summer, and we're now submitting it to festivals. So I'm really looking forward to that, and them having a platform to have their voice to not just talk about that issue, but they can use that to talk about what's going on now, what needs to be done. And again, it's just like, girls, you go off and you make crap happen. I'm here, I'll help you in any which way I am. I'll raise the money for you guys, I'll do whatever I can here, but it's down to you. So that's a really amazing thing, and I'm really excited about that coming out.
It sounds incredible, and I really cannot wait. I really cannot wait. It sounds, you're doing good work. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Lorna. We can't wait to screen your film in Pitch House Cinemas. Do go out and see it. It's out on the 23rd of March. We look forward to seeing a lot more of Lorna in the very many years to come. So thank you so much for taking time.
Oh, thank you.
We'll see you again.
See you soon.
Listening to the Picture House podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.